Okay, so today is the 30th of January, 2020, the 4th of Shvat, Tavshin Pei. So we are Meforshim day of Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12. So the chapter 12 covers a couple of topics, which don't necessarily seem under it opens up by saying, these are the laws which you're going to keep when you enter into the land. And what's the main topics covered over the course of the Perek is the eating of the requirement to uproot avodah zarah, and the prohibition of eating blood, and not being permitted to eat bamos. So these are like all the laws. So the Sforno explains here, Mikal hamitzvos elehim shetzarek shetishmerozan, asher b'kiyuman tirshu aretz kol yamim, that by fulfilling these mitzvos, you're going to inherit the land for all of the days. Shetavd mekomos kol avodah zarah, because you need to take care of the avodah zarah. V'shelo tasu kamosim, and not to do like them. And not to be like them, where you're going to offer korbanos, or where you're going to serve God everywhere. I mean, that's actually a very key component, that you're going to go into the land, but we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be a central location where everything is going to be done. It's not going to be like the people who worship Avodah Zarah, that they just do things wherever they want. And you're going to have a specific place. That place which Hashem chooses from all of the Shvatim. So it's actually, I think what the Sforno is saying is that while it sounds like these are some detailed prohibitions over the course of this parak that don't necessarily consume one's entire life, they actually are, right? I mean, by keeping this, you're getting rid of all the Avodah Zarah, and you're focusing everything towards the place, B'makom Asher Yivchar, the place that Hashem chooses, which is going to be a dramatic change from what there was in the past. It's not going to be everybody could have their own backyard bama, or their own neighborhood Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan that keeps traveling around, that there's going to be a focus on one specific spot where everybody is going to direct, which is and that also affects the issue of Shechita and Dam that we see towards the end of the parak. That now we're going to permit Basar Taiva, that is a direct result of that halacha. The fact that we no longer have individual bamos, or the fact that the Mizbeach is not near people anymore. So Hashem then permits and says, okay, you can shech the animals without the requirement of bringing them as part of a korban. So that's a dramatic change that takes place as one goes into Eretz Yisrael. And one says the Sforno, that's going to be directly related to your success of living in the land, which we see. As you pointed out, I guess the other day when we started talking about this, that's like the biggest sin in Sefer Shoftim and in Malachim is this idea of people having these private bamos in their backyard. That was like a big problem that had to be dealt with. So it's not just the idea that, oh, they're violating this issue of kachin b'chutz, of sanctifying things outside, but rather they're distracting from the centrality of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, which perhaps has broader implications. So a couple of years ago, I was at the Franklin Institute. Yeah, Franklin Institute brought in the exhibit of the scrolls, the Dead Sea Scrolls. They ran the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit in the Franklin Institute. I remember the exponent had a party, like an opening night. The exponent at the time there, they had like a major event at one of their first nights, so I was invited. That's why I got to see this exhibit. And you go, and it wasn't just the Dead Sea Scrolls; it was sort of a biblical times thing. And you're walking through, and they say, they had like an altar there, like a small altar. And they said, oh, this is one of the private altars that the Jews used and offered sacrifices to, and quoted some of Avodah Zarah. And like you think for a minute, like, that doesn't sound too good. Like, where'd they come up with that idea that everybody is in violation of Avodah Zarah? And then you realize, wait a second, read the book of Malachim, and you realize that they're violating Avodah Zarah all over the place. That's what seems to be described. Perhaps not at such a grand scale, but certainly at a scale, and that is also related to the idea of having Mizbechos, of having private bamos. Fine.
Did they say they really, what they found using the Dead Sea, the Essenes used bamos?
I don't remember the details. It wasn't just Israel in biblical times with the focus on the Dead Sea. Yeah. All right. So the first couple of psukim talk about going in and destroying the mizbechos and the Asherah trees and the idols and all that. And then it says in Pasuk Dal, Lo tasu kein l'Hashem Elokeichem. You shouldn't do that to Hashem, your God. So the Sifri learns out from that. The Or HaChaim quotes from the Sifri. Amar Rabbi Yishmael, Minayin l'mochek os min Hashem sh'over below tase. That if you erase a letter from the name of Hashem, you're in violation of the lo taseh. D'chsiv v'varatem eshemam lo tasun kein adkan. It says that you're going to eradicate their names, meaning the Vodazara names, and don't do this to Hashem. So that is a so that's therefore a prohibition here. This to the point. This is an issue. Maybe this would be part of halacha day, but this is an issue with correcting mezuzahs and tefillin. That if there's an issue with the name of Hashem, so there's often the issues that one will find in mezuzah and tefillin have to do with connections to one another, right? So you have to erase, you're cutting away the you use a razor really to erase the set connections between these letters. So you have a problem if that's within the name of Hashem. Was then by definition, you're sort of erasing the name of Hashem, the extension of the name of Hashem. So I think we do that anyways. I mean, we'll make the small as an eraser as possible in order to separate the letters. Was the assumption is that that's not part of the letter. Now, my nephew showed me, my nephew is a sofer in Eretz Yisrael, so he showed me somebody had requested mehudar mezuzahs in very unique sizes, very specific sizes. Apparently he had cases, but he wanted, he had smaller cases, but he wanted mehudar mezuzahs for these cases. So like a 7-centimeter mehudar mezuzah goes for, you know, I think they were selling it to him for something like $250 or something like that. It's pretty difficult to do. So he showed me one that was an issue because one of the letters of the Shem Hashem sort of had like a little bit of ink coming out of it to the point that it sort of forms a crown. So we, under normal circumstances, we wouldn't think much of it, but it's not mehudar. If it has a crown, that's too much. So, all right, so what's the big deal? You just erase it a little bit. No, you can't erase it because it's part of the Shem Hashem. Yeah. Right? So that, it's a kosher mezuzah, it's just not going to be mehudar anymore.
But it has a problem because it has a weird shape. Nobody's going to buy it.
No, people regularly need 7 centimeters. I mean, I try not to because the standard mezuzahs that you get that are 7 centimeters are generally problematic.
You're not mehudar.
But this person wanted a mehudar one for his 7-centimeter case, which is, you know, about this big, not very easy to write.
Right.
So that was an issue. So that's something to keep in mind, not just erasing the name of Hashem. Normally think about it. Issues having to do with Sheamus, but here is a specific issue with regards to stam items. So then the Or HaChaim continues on and says, "V'ulai can yischavin a kasev lirmo shnei pratei din." That could be that the way the pasuk is written, it wanted to allude to two specific halachos sheyeshnam b'din hamochek shem mishmos mizbarach that have to do with the halachos of erasing from the names of Hashem. Echad Hashem asm. One has to do with the name itself. The echad hanitpal laHashem l'acharav. One has to do with the suffixes to the name. Right, but omro laHashem hareyaz hara laHashem. Plus, if it would have said lo tasu kein laHashem, so it means to the name of Hashem. V'lo Havaya Levad, and not the name of not the name itself. Right? Ella Shekol Kiyotzi Bo Mishmosav, and anything like the name. So Vizeb Binyan Avlehem Vomru Elokechem Remez Le Chem Shinitfalu Lelukim. And then it hints by the word of Lachem, right? So it's all the names of Hashem, not just specific ones. And then it says Lotasukein Lahashem Elokechem. So why does it have to say Elokechem? Why don't you say either Lashem or Lashem Leilokech? So Leilokechem is to indicate that the Chem is part of the name also. So Leilokechem, even though it translates as your God, and the Chem really means your, not God, because it's connected to the name of Hashem, that's going to be included in the prohibition. And then he says, Mashakasa Ramam Perak Vav Mihilchus Yisodi Atar She'en Loka Elal Osios Hashem, that the Ram says you only get Malchus for the actual letters of Hashem, so indicating that this is not the Rambam doesn't hold like this. And the Rambam is saying that you're only going to get Malchus if you eradicate the name of Hashem, and he doesn't seem to be alluding to this issue, the issue of the suffixes. So the Or HaChaim says that's not a problem because the halacha is that you only get malchus if you violate the prohibition as it is mefurish b'kra, as it is explicitly in the verse. But anything that is only alluded to in the verse is not included in the prohibition of malchus. So Or HaChaim says, yeah, so it's not a problem. There's still an isur d'oraisa, a biblical prohibition of eradicating the prefixes and the suffixes, anything connected to the name of Hashem. But you're not going to get malchus on it unless it's not explicit in the text. But interesting halacha learned out from the Or HaChaim. Okay, so in the next pasuk, also an important a pasuk with significant ramifications. So it says, "Ki, rather you're going to focus on the places pasuk hey, Asher yivcha Hashem Elokeichem mikol shiftechem, that Hashem has chosen from all of the tribes, lasuma shemo sham, to place his name there, l'shichnosid rishu uvasa shama." Right, so you should go and figure out the place to reside, and then you will come there. So the Sforno says, what is that alluding to? So he says, Lishechno, that there's going to be a Mishkan there, referring to either the Mishkan in Shiloh or the Beis HaMikdash, Olamim, the Beis HaMikdash, Tidrashu, El Osu HaMako HaNichar, Tidrashu, Lishtachav Osu LaHakriv. You're going to figure out that place to then bow and to bring karbanos. It says, Uvasa Shama, Lo Shiyavo Mishkan Shemo Aleichem, Mikol Makom. And you're going to come there, not to bring the Mishkan there, but rather to build up the Beis HaMikdash. So that is the way that Sforno darshans out the pasuk. The Ramban, however, quotes from a Sifri, a very important Sifri for a machlokas that showed up over the course of the 1800s. Was there somebody during the 1800s? This could also be a halacha de nominee, but I think we won't. But the question came up about there's someone named Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer who lived in the middle of the 1800s who came up with the idea that we should sort of force the issue with regards to the Mashiach coming, and we should go to Yerushalayim. He was living in Europe at the time. We should go to Yerushalayim and build a Beis HaMikdash. Right? Whenever Rosh Hefter would tell the story, he would say, he might not have been aware that there was a mosque there. Like, he figured, we'll go to Yerushalayim, you know, there's nothing there, there's a mountain, we'll build the Beis HaMikdash in that spot. And the story goes, not just a story, I mean, this is documented, that he actually received funding for this project. He went to Baron Rothschild, and he told Baron Rothschild that if you give us money to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, not only will we, put your dedicated, it will be the Rothschild Beis HaMikdash, but you will also be get the esteemed title of Melech HaMashiach, because you're the one who is funding the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. So there's this led to a very large halachic discussion amongst the Rabbanim in Europe whether this can actually be done. Most of the focus was actually specifically on bringing the Korban Pesach, right? And all the issues came up, right? So why can't you just go up to Har HaBayis and bring Korbanos? So one is because the Arabs will kill you. Okay, well, let's put that to the side. But the immediate issues of, well, everybody's tameh. Second of all, we don't really know where it's supposed to be, where the Mizbeach is supposed to be, right? Third of all, right, so all of these issues were sort of were debated back and forth. But there's Rabbi Kiva Eger was involved. There was someone named Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger. Yaakov Etlinger is the author of the Aruch Laner. A pretty prominent, he was the Rebbe of Samson Raphael Hirsch. He wrote also a tshuva sefer entitled Binyan Siyam, which was because the first several tshuvos had to do with this topic of Binyan Siyam. He was one of the people against also. And Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer's sefer that he put together was called the Drishas Siyam, right? The Drishas Siyam became the Machlokas Drishas Siyam versus Binyan Siyam. Things went back and forth. I've read different accounts. Rabbi Bleich, in one of his contemporary halachic problems, has a recording of this issue in English, if you're interested, one of the early, maybe the first contemporary halachic problems. And a little bit of a question whether Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was ever convinced one way or the other. But in Rav Schechter's presentation, the main answer that he couldn't overcome was this Ramban here. Others record that, no, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer passed away thinking that, you know, we're going to go ahead and do this and we should do this. Others say, no, he was sort of corrected. In fact, I have a biography of Rav Cook at home, and they have a picture there of the first postage stamps that were printed by, I think Mizrahi printed them, meaning the sort of the Zionist world printed these postage stamps and they had, and there were three different ones. One was Rav Kook, one was maybe Rav Sonnenfeld, Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, I don't recall. And the third was Rav Zvi Hirsch Kalischer. So he was seen sort of as the father of the modern Zionist movement that we're going to go back and actively bring back the Beis HaMikdash. So the Ramban here, however, quotes a Sifri where it says L'shichno Sid Rishu, the place you're going to darshan, darush al pi navi. It has to be darshaned by a navi. So Yachol Tamtin Ad Shiyomer Lecha Navi. So maybe just sit back and wait, and maybe a navi will come along and I'll tell you the spot. So Tamalomer, no, L'shichno Sid Rishu Uvasa Shama. You should go and figure out where it is. Go there. And then a navi will tell you whether you are correct or not. That's what the Sifri says, and we see that's what happens. V'chein atamotzi b'David in Shmuel, when it describes David figuring out where Yerushalayim is going to be. So it says that David stayed up all night with Shmuel figuring out the makom haMikdash and where things are going to be. And then he was certified by a navi. So the Ramban says that that's what's required. And not just for the first Beis HaMikdash it was done that way, but for the second Beis HaMikdash it was done that way as well. Right? The end of Nevuah was soon after the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. That Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi, that they were integral to the reestablishment of the second Beis HaMikdash. But if in the absence of Nevuah...
Ezra and Sofer, they still had Nevuah when he was there.
Yeah, they were that era. The end of the period of Nevuah was overlapped with the beginning of the period of the second Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. So they were. It wasn't just that was coincidence. That was integral to the second Beis HaMikdash being built. You required the prophecies of Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. So in order for the third Beis HaMikdash to go up, you're going to require the certification of a Navi as well. And that we don't have a halachic replacement for. So that's a bit of a, I mean, we could still perhaps argue on that a little bit. There could very well be distinctions between the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash in terms of the sanctity of the space. I mean, that is a question that is an open question. It could be that at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Kedusha left the Makom, and therefore it had to be reestablished by the second Beis HaMikdash. But it could be the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kedusha never actually left. So it could be that maybe we could go based off of the Nevuah of Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. So this place has remained intact and sanctified. That's a big machlokas, whether there is Kedusha to the place at all. So machlokas Rambam and Ravid, whether that place is still sanctified. The Rambam holds yes, and the Ravid holds no. And actually one of the somewhat vague Ravids where he exactly is alluding to. And then that perhaps poses one of the issues that was debated in that is that if there's no Kedusha to the place, so fine, there's no Kedusha to the place, but then we could go build the Mizbeach there anyways because there's no Isser of Bamos anymore, right? The worst comes to worst, it's a Bamo. And that's what we're going to go ahead and do there. While it's not necessarily true, there are some Bali Tosfos that said that no, that once the prohibition of Bamos came into place with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, it never came back even with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? It's not necessarily that they go together. So that's a question that is still out there. Okay. Fine. Alright, so there is a interesting Ramban as we move through here. Somewhat lengthy towards, as you go to Pasuk Chaf Beis, that in verse 22, that whole area, that if you start with 21, where you're in a far enough place from the way that Hashem chose to place the Beis HaMikdash there, you're going to offer and where your behemos are going to be offered, v'achalta b'sherachi, eat in your place as you desire, right? Ach, but kasher yachel es hatzvi ves hayal, as you eat the deer and the gazelle or something, kein tochlan, so too you will eat these. Tamei v'hatohor yachtav yochlan. The tamei and tohor together, you're going to be able to eat. Now it's a little bit vague what that is referring to. The tamei and the tohor that are going to be eaten together. What's that? So Rashi. Uh, So Rashi says that as you incha muzer la'achlan betara, that you're not commanded to eat betara anymore. Imat zivayal chelvan mutter af chulin chelvan mutter tamal domer ach. So you're not commanded to eat in tara anymore. I mean, you can mix it with these other animals, but it's no longer going to be considered kachim. And then it suggests, well, maybe that means that its chelev should be permissible. I mean, that's actually what it almost sounds like, right? That the that the chalev, the forbidden fats of the animal, only prohibited when it comes to behemos, and are not prohibited when it comes to chayos. So maybe that's what it means, that maybe the chalev of the animals is only prohibited to behemos when they're offered as a korban, because the chalevs were offered as on mizbeach. But if you're not offering it as a korban, maybe it's permissible. So therefore it says, no, ach. The term ach in the beginning of the pasuk is to exclude the permissibility of the chalev, the forbidden fats, and that's part of the reason why kosher meat is so expensive, because we still require the removal of chalev, bizman hazeh, right? That's they call trabering the meat, right? That we separate the fat and clean the animals in order to make sure that the forbidden fats are taken away. The process called nicker. So the Ramban, however, has a lengthy piece here where he gets into the how much of it should we do? What is the comparison exactly to the Tzvi and to the Ayal? So the Ramban says that you're going to be. I mean, what is the idea that they're permitted to be mixed together? So the Ramban first starts off by saying that because it was originally in the Midbar said that you can only eat this meat if you're going to eat it as a korban shlamim, and they were commanded that if you're tameh, right, that's going to be a problem. So here it says, here it says that you can eat it as being tameh. You could eat it with things that are tameh, as opposed to the way it was done before. I mean, that's the symbol that it's basar taiva, that it's things that you're eating as a desire and not being brought as a korban, which is that you're not required to be tahor when eating it. Rather, it could be tameh. So the tameh and the tahor can eat it together. Just as the tzvi and the ayal were eaten in the desert. I'm not sure we have too many recordings of them eating tzvi and ayal in the desert, right? The Sinai grill, I'm not sure it was serving that much venison while Bnei Yisrael were traveling in the Midbar, but halachically, that's what would have been permissible. So it says, and don't say ve'ena tamkat tzvi l'chayal that you can eat the chalev together kilo hiske rak ha'evus. It's only talking about how it's going to be eaten, but not what it's going to be together. Meaning, whatever is mutter of both animals can be eaten together, but there's no indication that the chalev is then going to be permissible. Another one, and Another thing that he talks about is the issue of the blood. That needs to say, only the blood you can't eat. And there's many reasons for that. Because in the beginning, Amar b'Isra Adam v'anina sati v'lechem azbeach l'chapar al nafshu seichem. In the beginning, it says that I've assigned it for you on the korban to provide an atonement for you. So maybe the implication, I mean, we already learned the prohibition of eating dam in Vayikra. So why do we have to have it repeated? He says, well, maybe the only the prohibition of dam, the prohibition of blood, was related to the fact that it needed to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. But if it's not going to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach, so then maybe there's no prohibition for it. So therefore, it has to come and prohibit it here as well. But there is no aval b'chev lo hiske b'suri kain. But it doesn't correlate with regards to the chelev. Ve'ein kol hakariv min haimurim aser v'lo kol she'ino kariv mutter. And it's not that everything that was put on is prohibited and everything that wasn't put on is permissible. And rather, I discuss it over there in Vayikra. Um, Oh, he also says that since that the command is sort of put together with Tzvi and Nayal, so maybe I would think that there's a similar halacha to that. By a mashra shenichna hadam, that maybe I would also be required to cover the blood, as he spoke about the other day. But just as the Tzvi, and maybe it should be comparable. So he says, no, v'al kolpanim hutzrach lahati shenishbuch hadam b'mayim below kisoy. So therefore, it says it explicitly that you could pour the blood without covering it up. Where do we see that? Plus it says, al ha'aretz, that the blood here is going to be al ha'aretz, as opposed to ba'aretz. Then when it discusses the idea of kisoy adam, so then it says the blood's going to be in the land. Here it doesn't say it has to be in the land, it only says it has to be on the land. So when it comes to behemos, there is no requirement of doing kisoy adam, as opposed to birds and chayos, where there is. So then he says, so why would that be? So why would that be? Why would we have that distinction? So then he skipped around a little bit. He says, "Vanir be'inai ha'batama inyan azeh." Why would that be that we only worry about kisui adam by chayos and by birds and not by behemos? So he says, "Ki mitchil ba'yosim emidbar yalal yeshimun v'shiarim yirakdu sham v'hayu kulam yotzi mitzrayim haragilim behem aser laharos hadam al pnei hasada v'izboach." Klal rak lifnei mishkan Hashem laharchik kosam minachetahu. So Rabban says, oh, because that all has to do with with avodah zarah. Because originally when they were in the desert, right, it's usiirim yirak dusham. It's the place where the siirim dance. What are the siirim? So he says the siirim is actually a pasuk in Yeshaya, which is a reference to the demons, that the demons dance. And they were all coming out of Egypt, and they've been accustomed to having blood left on the open field, or to bring korbanos towards Hashem. And the idea that we were going to offer korbanos only in the Mishkan, that's to get rid of that concern of this demon worship, which apparently was done out in the field. Aval bavoam ba'aretz, because they got to the land of Israel, v'hutzruch lahatir baser taiva v'fnei racha kamakom, when they wanted now to permit baser taiva, lo chashash in yishchu v'teihem dam ha'bakar v'atzon al-aretz. There's no concern that we're going to pour the blood of the bakar and the tzon on the land in order to bring the demons there. Because apparently you don't want the demons in your house. You only want to come to the demons if you're out in the field someplace. But the dam and the chaya and the oaf, when it comes to the blood of chayas and oafs, asher yatsud basada uvayar, those aren't flocks that you keep near your house. Those are captured out in the field and in the forest. And the minhag was to shech them there, ulavim shchutim alabayas, and to bring them shechted back to the house. If that's the case, he's yira mitzvah kasher haisa lichsos daman ba'afar. If that's the case, so that the mitzvah was left as was, that the blood needs to be covered by the earth, shelo yakrivenu lasi yirim, in order that the demons don't come. So that is like a little out there. The Ravan says, but we could say this was a real concern, that there was real demon worship going on in Egypt, and the idea of demon worship was blood being left out in the middle of nowhere. But it wouldn't be in the house. So there were two issues that we tried to avoid. Number one is we made sure that the shechita of these animals would be near the Beis HaMikdash or near your private houses, where you would avoid the concern about demon worship. But these other animals that were shechted out in the field, so the concern still existed, li'olam va'ad, forever. So therefore, you require the covering of the blood on those animals in order to avoid the open blood, which brings along the sea rim. So that's one suggestion that the Ramban brings. He also adds in as well another interesting point. He says, why is it that there's like six psukim devoted to this blood thing, and it concludes with don't eat it in order that you'll get a reward, pasuk hafei, and pasuk havav is 26, rak katshecha asher yulecha undarecha pasuk hav gimel, it says rak chazak, strengthen yourself in order not to eat this dam. So What do you mean strengthen yourself not to eat this dam? And don't worry, you're going to get a great reward for not eating the blood. So why is there so much emphasis on this specific mitzvah? So Rashi's explanation was to see, look how great the reward is for other mitzvahs. If for the mitzvah of blood, which a person doesn't want to associate with and a person is naturally disinclined to partake in, one is awarded such a great you get such a reward, and the Torah is like so careful about it, how much more so with other mitzvahs, other prohibitions that a person has a stronger Yitzhahara for. But the Ramban says, but the Ramban says, this is the only time that it ever mentions the idea of be chazak, be strong with regards to a specific mitzvah. We are told, chazak ve'amatz, be strong with regards to mitzvos, right, the entire Torah. But it's not about, this is the only time it's ever about a specific mitzvah. So he says, why do we have it here? Because it's not just about the blood, the isser of consuming blood. Rather, it is a general prohibition going back to the whole issue of being in Egypt. This is sort of a paradigm for avoid the behavior that took place while you were in Egypt. And if you see that, and that was a constant issue, that we see a constant refrain, be strong. Plus, Egypt was not just about Avodah Zarah, Egypt was also about immorality, Egypt was about all sorts of things that were terrible, which is also why there's a mitzvah about not going and resettling, going back into Egypt and resettling, but that perhaps is a paradigm for it. You have to remove yourself from that way of life, and perhaps that's what's being specifically commanded on with regards to this. That's not just be strong and don't eat blood, it's be strong and don't and make sure that you are totally separated from the life that you witnessed and perhaps experienced when you were in Mitzrayim. Okay? I think we're out of time. A couple more Rambans, but see that for another time. All right. Have a good day.
What should happen?